How are you
Hi,
today?
Kate.
Everything going okay?
Yep, everything's good.
We're having a beautiful day here today.
So are we. It's like close to 70. We're getting another record high day. And
wow.
But I think that after today, it's still going to start getting colder and stuff. The thing is we're getting a new driveway. Did I tell you that?
No, no. Now, do you have an asphalt one now?
No, it's cement, but it's kind of, it's built on a hill.
Okay.
And there's a lot of fill. And they didn't, when they built it, they didn't put the cracks in it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all cracked because they didn't put enough of them in. And plus it has a big curve that, you know, I can get out of the garage just fine by turning, but you always feel like you're going to drive right off, you know?
Yep, yep.
And
so you're going to tear it up?
Yeah. Tearing the whole thing up, building a new retaining wall, and making it come straight out from the garage.
Wow.
Street. So the whole driveway is going to be like, I don't know, 30, 35 feet wide, something like that.
That's major.
So they're supposed to be doing that. They were supposed to start on it yesterday. Well, a bobcat was in my driveway when we got home, but none of the cement was broken up. But they're running out of time, so.
Yeah, I've got my driveway cement, and it's got, I don't know if it was cheap cement or, you know, the cement washed away, and you can kind of see the stones in where it's in the cement.
Yeah, yeah.
Concrete, and I don't know what to do with it.
Hi, who just joined us?
Jim Gordon, City of Fireball, California.
Hey, Jim, how are you today?
Well, wonderful, thank you.
Good, I'm glad you could join us.
How is it out in California?
Right now, it's a wonderful weather. It's in the 60s and partly cloudy.
Wow.
Now, here in Iowa, we're having the same weather you are. Believe it or not.
Not for long.
All we have to do is bring in our cotton, and we're through farming for the year.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, are you in northern or southern or mid California?
Mid California.
Oh, great. Is it like north of L.A. or?
The city of Fireball is about halfway between San Francisco and Los Angeles, and it's the major highway that goes from Mexico to Canada along the west. Fireball's 18 miles east of Highway 5.
Oh, yes. Okay. I know where that is. Sure. Well, that's beautiful. So now you're on the desert side of the mountains, though, right?
Yeah, we're virtually a desert out here, but it's our county is the richest agricultural county in the United States by income to the farm gate.
Really? Are you the place when we're flying into L.A., we see these big circles?
No. We grow vegetables, fruits, and cotton, and increasingly nut trees.
Wow.
And we are beset by water issues, as in the entire western United States is beset by them. So we've lost 250,000 acres of farmland in our region in the last 3 years or 2 years.
Because of water issues.
Yeah, water issues and drainage issues.
Really? Wow. Well, you know, you don't think about it. I'm in the eastern part of the country, and there's plenty of water, and Glo's in the Midwest where there's plenty of water, sometimes too much water. So
Yeah,
for sure.
Situation for that. Now,
we're on the San Joaquin River. We border the river, and it's being restored now. So that's a fine thing for our community.
It is. Have you got brownfields?
Yeah, we have we are doing our phase one assessments and phase two.
Hi, who just joined us?
This is Daniel from North Star, Center for Development out of Hartford, Connecticut.
Hi, Daniel. How are you today?
Doing well.
Glad you can join us. Hi, someone just joined us.
Al Dyson.
Hey, Al.
How
you doing?
In a while. How you doing?
I made it this time.
Good for you.
Right now we're talking, and there'll be people joining us. We're talking to Jim Gordon. He's with the City of Fireball in California, the Lucky Duck. He's telling us about the program out there. It's basically, it sounds like an agricultural economy.
Hi, who just joined us? Did someone just join in?
Yes, this is Morgan Horton from Harrisburg Area Community College.
Hi, Morgan.
Jim's telling us about his program in California. Now, you don't currently have a Brownfields job training program, but it sounds like you're thinking of starting one. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. We are planning to apply, and we're planning to apply also in the fall for a revolving loan fund remediation grant.
Good. We're going to use you as a good example of where we're at now and what's going to happen. The RFP for the Brownfields job training was supposed to be out by now, but EPA is typically late on all of their deadlines, usually by about a month. We probably will expect to see it in the next couple of weeks towards the end of November.
Actually, Mike, I just talked to Joe Bruss from headquarters today, and he's saying that he's hoping it's out within the next 3 weeks now.
Okay. So we may hit the beginning of December. Now, I assume they're going to delay the due date an equal amount. It's due at the end of January.
I would think so. He didn't say anything about that, but that would be my guess.
That would put it into February. They're supposed to award them in April, but now we're really talking probably more like June. I was talking to Tim Brewer from St. Louis yesterday, and they're, to give you an example of timing, St. Louis has been on the cutting edge, and they're an excellent they have an excellent program. They've been involved for quite a while, and they're going for a re-up. And they were having a meeting today. Couldn't join today because they were having a meeting, but he wanted to sit down and talk about some of these issues we're going to talk about today. They're having their first planning meeting for writing the grant, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Assume you're going to go in for a Brownfield RFP. There is a draft on the Internet. If you go to the Brownfields job training page, it's going to be changed slightly. And we're going to try to talk a little bit about potential anticipated changes we see, but it'll be pretty close. And the first thing they do is they screen everyone with qualifying criteria to make sure that you're qualified to get the grant. And that's done by a contractor. They just make sure that you fit all of the qualifying criteria. That's kind of a mechanical, very objective screen, and they'll knock some out. If there's 100 of them, they may knock out 10 of them because they just don't qualify. And I would say there might be about 75 to 100 applicants, maybe 75. They used to have about 45. It's been jumping. The amount is a little higher, and they tend to be getting more applicants. Then they're going to go into the more subjective, but it's still objective ranking criteria. And basically what they try to do on these grants is, because you've got 70 grant applications and you got to bring it down to about 13, you've got to have some way of grading everyone. And then at the end, the top 20 or so will go to the assistant administrator and they'll look them over. Generally, if you have a higher score, you'll probably get picked. If you have a lower score, you probably won't. But there is a subjectiveness there, I think. Special situations, or they may look at them internally within EPA and due to their experience and different things. If there were two applications from the same area, for example, they may want not take one out. So they would make a more subjective decision. But what's really important in this, it's pretty as much a slam dunk whether you qualify or not, but it's the ranking criteria that's important. And, of course, as they've talked about on some of these webinars, what you have to do is go through those ranking criteria and address every question. It was like on the professional engineering exams, when you take an exam, you answer every question and you answer very specifically, as concise as you can, and definitely answer, because they grade them and they say, well, they didn't answer this question, but they told us why they didn't answer it.
Hi, did someone just join in?
Yeah, Glow, this is Valerie. How you doing?
I'm good, Valerie. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Valerie, we're talking about where we should be now with the re-ups and the planning for the new grant. We're talking a little bit about the ranking criteria. So you really want to answer every question very specifically and to the point, and with the objective of treat each question as an autonomous question, because what they'll do is they'll divide up the questions, and certain people may rank some questions and others. So to go through 75 grant proposals is quite a challenge. So they bring about a dozen people together and they split the grants up, and then they start grading, just like a teacher would grade your essay question.
They'll be careful
and
with
each question will be graded and
assigned
a point value.
People.
And then they'll sum up the point values. Did someone have a question? Oh, okay. So anyway, what we want to talk about now is, well, what do we do now so that we can get the highest point totals on these questions? And what's very important at this point, because the final ruling isn't out yet, the final RFP, is what preliminary things do we need to do? And these are things that are going to take a little bit of time. You can't do it in the last month. And what you want to do is gather as much data as you can to support the different arguments in the ranking criteria. And you can go to the website, and in post-session notes we'll put the URL for the current proposal. And you want to start gathering those long-term things. And one thing that comes to my mind, and Jim, you mentioned that you're in the process of getting some revolving loan funds in your area. They are required to have public hearings. You're not required to have public hearings, but if you want to be really up and on the ball and score a lot of points with EPA, what you want to do is go to the people, make your acquaintances, and preferably partnerships with the people in the revolving loan funds or in the assessment pilots, and tell them that you're planning on applying for the EPA job training program, and you would like to make this announcement at the public hearing and solicit potential partners, supporters, it's an excellent, it costs you nothing. They do all the work in terms of holding the announcements for the public hearing, and you will take 10 minutes and of that session, and you will announce your intents to do a job training program. And this is going to get you a whole lot of things. One, it's going to bring partners out of the woodwork you may not have known about. It'll allow you to partner with the assessment pilots that are going in. And also, most important for the purposes of evaluating the grant, you will be able to write in the grant, and you'll want to document your participation in this public hearing, that you, in the community section of the grant application, that you held, you partnered with the job, with the assessment or the revolving loan fund or the underground storage tank public hearing. You partnered with them and presented at that public hearing in the public. And this would give you tremendous, when the readers would read this, they'd say, these people are really on the ball, because they not only partnered with the brownfields, other brownfields programs, but they have also partnered with the community in terms of a public hearing. So the issue here is that takes time to do that, and you can't do that in the last month of your grant writing. So what you need to do is, now is a great time to do it and find out if they've held a public hearing, when they plan on doing it, and announce your intents. You also want to make your intentions known to the mayor's office, which now, Jim, are you in the mayor's office? in at City?
Well, we're such a small city. The city manager and I are sort of partners.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's no mayor's office. We have a town of maybe 7,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we rely on grants.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to hold a public hearing regarding your
brownfield? That is such a wonderful idea. Yeah, and so we have to work backwards with the public notice and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
We will round up all of the folks who are undergoing assessments, and we're partnering with the Community College District. In fact, their grants office and I are co-writing the proposal, and we've got a lot of things in that area going, but I love the idea of a public hearing.
And, you know, a public hearing doesn't have to be a huge party with 10,000 people. I participated one in Gary. It was at the library, and we had a few citizens there, but we had someone from the mayor's office and some speakers. And it often yeah. they'll just hold them in a library or some public place. Yeah.
We have a community coalition of 25 partners from all sectors of the community, and we will probably hold the public hearing in conjunction with that meeting. So we have students, agriculture, business, faith-based, nonprofits, government, educators, and whatnot at that meeting. And what we will do then is a wonderful idea of the 24 owners of parcels or businesses who are being assessed. We will round up as many of them as we can and get them to that hearing.
Great. Now, what you also want to do at that hearing, before and after the hearing, is you want to get them commit letters of support to you, because you're mm-hmm. going to need letters of support for the grant application. And if you get it now, you won't have to worry about it later. Now,
thank you for that. And we have a couple of one of the things we're doing. We have an energy conversion district we're setting up with businesses that will take ag waste and turn them into biodiesel fuel.
Right.
So I guess those are green jobs.
They are
green
jobs.
And the owners of those companies want to hire the trainees.
Excellent. I think a company called Rentec is quite active out there.
Building
we have a big
BioEasy. And they take McDonald's kitchen grease. And then we are partnering with a couple of counties, plant camelina, and turn that into biodiesel fuel.
Excellent.
And set up some biodiesel service stations in the area.
Excellent. Now, what you want to do... Go ahead.
Planning to have its own hazardous waste and petroleum tank removal business attached to its public works department. We're setting that up. We'll hire the trainees.
Excellent. Excellent. You bring up a couple of very interesting points. You want to, when you meet with the employers, if you could get letters of support from your employers, one of the big emphasis is, it's one thing to train people, it's another to place them. And an employer can't guarantee there will be a job opening, but they can support your program and seriously consider hiring your graduates. And to the extent that you have letters of support indicating that, you can also use that in your narrative. One of the issues about this RFP is it's got such a high placement threshold. They want a very large number of people placed. And in this economy, that's extremely difficult. That's telling us that we're going to have to justify where are we going to place them. It's one thing to set up a training program, and we're going to do this, and we're expecting to place them in these industries. But it's quite another if you have a letter of support from those industries and indicate that these are the specific jobs and you've done a thorough needs assessment, which we've talked about in different sessions, in PLC sessions, but it's very important that you tie the training program to the jobs, because that's one of the things they're going to be looking for will be, okay, you're training. Now, once they're gone, once they're trained, do you have a pathway for them? And that's going to be key. And if you have a biorefinery, you've got potential there for a tremendous number of green jobs and environmental jobs to boot. One of the things that I want to mention while we're talking about green jobs, and it's more of a it's an opinion, and it's just something I want to throw out, and you can take it with a grain of salt. There's a lot of money coming down in weatherization, and I was talking to Tim Boole about this yesterday. In the Northeast, in your northern climates, there's a ton of HUD money coming in for training and jobs for low-income housing and such, stimulus money. I think there is concern in EPA that with this small program, the concern is, should we be really funding weatherization training? We realize it's a green job, and we realize that you could consider it as an environmental job and take credit for it under this program. But the question in the back of your mind, if you have two proposals, and one is training and placing direct environmental jobs, and the other one is training and placing weatherization people, which is a secondary environmental job. It's still a green environmental job, and it qualifies. Which one would you take as the one to fund? And it's my opinion that they would tend to move over towards the environmental jobs rather than the weatherization jobs. And the reason is they're going to say, well, HUD is supplying much, much more money than we can ever provide for training weatherization employees. So why should we be funding their program? Why should we be training their people to go in there where they already have it? So I'm not downplaying weatherization jobs, but I'm taking them with a word of caution that if you have a choice, a strong contender would be one that everyone's going to have weatherization jobs. Everyone in the Northeast is going to be doing weatherization training, and it's like if you've got to stand out amongst the grantees, you may want to stay away from, not necessarily stay away from it, but not be your prime certificate. The other area that is even a little more iffy is the whole area of wastewater treatment plant operators. Joe made kind of a little slip, and he hasn't, I don't know if this will come out in the RFP or not, but he said they're not sure about both weatherization and wastewater treatment operators. And now wastewater treatment operators are environmental jobs. They are definitely, and there's thousands of wastewater treatment plant operators. The history of EPA is that in the early 70s, wastewater treatment plants were operating very poorly, and they were polluting streams, and there was a huge push to build wastewater treatment plants. Well, there was a huge demand for wastewater treatment operators, and a lot of community colleges, in fact, Kirkwood Community College, which was used to be with part of HMTRI, had a huge wastewater treatment plant program, well, operator training. That demand was filled, and there is still a lot of treatment plant operator training going on. It's funded out of from block grants that are given to the states through the Office of Water. And this is very similar to weatherization issue. The question is, it's fine if you're going to train them, but there might be people who are going to say, why are we training them in a brownfields grant with limited funds when there are these huge programs to train them? So I guess what I'm saying, and I wouldn't you know, if you want to go ahead and do it anyway, I wouldn't say no, but I would say if you've got other strong programs, you may want to have a little caution in terms of both weatherization and wastewater treatment plant operator training. That's just an opinion, but as I see that happening, they have limited funds and they're really interested in environmental jobs. If you can get them. If you can't, then you go to these. You move over to the green jobs. That's why. The other thing that they're doing new this year is they're expanding from just brownfields to all of the program offices. The way EPA is organized is you got water, air. It's smokestack mentality in the federal government. The air is funded, water is funded, solid waste is funded. So you have all of these program offices, and they work fairly independently. In fact, Air Programs is located where I am in Research Triangle Park. Water is in Washington, and they've got different locations around the country. Water, Cincinnati had a big office. But the fact is, what they're doing is they're expanding to include not just soft solid waste, which was solid waste disposal and hazardous materials in brownfields. They're going to expand to water and air and urban agriculture and streams. So they're looking for innovative programs and training in some of these other areas. And, in fact, they're going to require that you do at least awareness training. One of the things in the RFP that's coming out, they said they're going to require, and they may change this, they're going to require that every program have a waste site worker training program, which is the HAZWOPR, and every program is going to have RRMP, which is lead health and safety training. That may or may not be on the RRMP because they may, if you demonstrate, and you'll have to wait till the final RFP comes out, they may say that if you demonstrate that it's not applicable to your area, it may not be a requirement. They'd like as many people as possible to get lead training, but if in an area like Jim's, which is fairly new, you may not have pre-78 housing with a lot of lead paint. So you may, do you have much?
My town is 150 years old.
Oh, so you've got lots of lead paint there. So,
yeah.
So it could be very relevant in your area. So there may be a case, for example, if you're in mine-scarred lands or you're in a very rural area, that RRMP may or may not be applicable. But they also are going to require awareness training in these other areas like air, water, waste, solid waste, urban agriculture, and the like. So you'll want to design an awareness course. If you're not going to go comprehensive and offer a course in it, you're going to want to have a catch-all course that will demonstrate awareness in some of these other environmental areas. But one thing that Jim's got that's interesting is you've got the potential for doing some non-traditional environmental training, which is the bio refining, the streams, the water streams, which really no one's done yet in any of these brownfields programs that I'm aware of. So you have something that will make your program stand out that isn't basically weatherization. So I think that's a real positive thing. What are some of the other people thinking of training? Daniel, what are you all thinking of doing in terms of your training?
Right now, everything that you mentioned we have in terms of weatherization, where we're finding jobs for guys in that area. We have mold that we're doing that might be a little different from other folks. We have an offset wastewater treatment operator class that we do on Saturday, which is strictly a volunteer. And that one we've been doing for the past year or so, in fact, a year and a half. New stuff, I know at the conference, the Brownsville, at the grantees conference, they did an emphasis on urban agriculture.
Okay.
So we got to take a look at the RP and see what happens there. That might be something, that we can, that we're looking at, getting into.
Right.
So, again, it all depends on the RP and how we want to do it. But we were in a meeting. I'm not sure if anybody was aware, but we were at a meeting yesterday in Boston with Region 1 and discussing some of the opportunities that are coming up. And you're absolutely right. There are opportunities that are coming up in other areas that are able to be funded. I know, I think today, either today or yesterday, Vice President Biden, he announced an initiative for energy efficiency. That's going to be huge. So these are all these areas that we're funding are available. But like you said, Brownfield has a certain amount of money, so I'm not sure how they want to target their particular funds. But I think what's happening is they're going to begin to target other agencies for funding to help. So we have the foundations already set with Brownfield. Now we're turning into an environmental job training program. So with that environmental job training program happening, the agency is looking for other agencies to chip into the pot to raise the amount of funding available. And I got a feeling, I think that's what's taking so long with this new RFP that's coming out. I think there's more funding that's going to come down the pipeline from other agencies to help us in our efforts, because we're all in the same boat doing the same thing at the same time. So I think that's what's happening now. But we're looking at opportunities within environmental greening, which is going to be helpful. And I want to say wastewater treatment is going to hopefully be helpful because of the population shift. I'm not sure if you mentioned that, the population shift in terms of the amount of jobs that's going to be available. Because when they had that huge push in the 1970s, now all those guys, 30 years later, they're ready to retire now. Right. So another huge push is going to have to occur with training a younger working class in the area of wastewater treatment operators. So those are all our ideas right now.
Wastewater treatment training was huge. It was the biggest job program EPA ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And they trained thousands of them. And you hit it right on the head. They're all retiring now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were able to tie the efficiency of a plant by the quality of the training of the operators. The problem with wastewater treatment plant operating is it does take a lab with a lot of equipment, pumps and valves and things like that. But it sounds like you've already got that.
Yep. We look at it as an opportunity for one, diversity within that area, as well as the need of new working class to go into that area. But then now we're also looking at stormwater. Because I know that's something that everybody's working on now, is in terms of how to handle stormwater. So that might be an area of opportunity. But we have to see how everything kind of unfolds.
Yeah.
Those are opportunities that the EPA is looking at, and I've been waiting patiently for this RFP to come out, and I'm dying to see what it looks like. I just heard the word. He said maybe December. And I really wanted to. We're working on ours now, just getting the infrastructure down to how we're going to submit it. But I really want to see the real thing, so I can wrap my brain around it.
Yeah, the key is going to be how they tweak. It'll be similar to what's on the internet now, but the key will be how they tweak the required curriculum that they're going to want you to have, and that'll be HAZWOPER, RRMP, and then if you don't have a course in those other specialties that you mentioned, an awareness course that it will include those. They're going to require those, and how they're going to tweak that. And to the extent that they emphasize or de-emphasize wastewater and weatherization will be interesting. It could be if they won't say anything about it, you know, then don't worry about it. It'll be interesting to see if they tweak that at all or how they tweak it. The rest of it will be pretty much the same as what you see there. But that doesn't take away from the fact that you need to do this preliminary stuff that takes a while, the public hearings. You need to start, certainly you should be working on your labor market assessment to see where these jobs are, pretty much like Daniel's doing, and seeing what's out there. And to the extent you can get letters of support and partners in some of these areas, particularly I would focus on the ones that are going to hire your employees, because they're going to be, like I said earlier, that path from your training program to employment is going to be what they'll be looking at real close. How well have you established that certainty of employment? And that flows through the labor market assessment and your partnering. The stronger your partnering, and particularly if you can get employers on your board, your advisory board.
Advisory board.
It's a very strong thing. So, well, we try to limit these calls to 30 minutes, but we're going to be back in 2 weeks. So I'll put the URL for the RFP that's out now. And as I said, they'll be pretty close to that with some tweaking that we talked about today. And in the next 2 weeks, I would start looking out and seeing to the extent that you could get into the mayor's office and get into some public hearings. I think that'd be a great thing. And then continue with your labor market assessment, trying to make partners, particularly partners who are going to hire your employees. And we'll kind of go from there. Anyone got any questions this week before we sign off?
Okay. I have a question. This is Morgan at Harrisburg Area Community College. I'm actually a grant writer, and we already have a Brownfields job training grant, so I'm not in the thick of everything here in terms of the programming. And I was asked to listen in on this conversation, and our program director for our grant was looking for information about certifications that were going to be discussed.
Right.
She thought.
Okay. We will. Actually, we could. I would say let's listen in next week, and we'll do certifications. We talked a little last week, last session, about train the trainer and different types of certifications. I'll put something in the post session notes about certifications. We're basically talking about HAZWOPR certification, which is the Hazardous Waste Site Worker. It's a 40-hour training program, an RRMP, which is a lead health and safety training certification. There are about six different types of certifications that you could offer. We're going to have a separate section. We're going to have a separate call just on certifications. So what I need to probably suggest to you is we could actually even talk about that next week when we can spend the whole half hour on all the different types of certifications, where to get them, and how to get them. The basic ones that you absolutely do have, they as of now, unless they change it, that you're going to need is the 40-hour HAZWOPR. That's health and safety. We call it waste site worker. It's a 40-hour course, and it conforms to what they call a Federal Register 1910-120. It's a health and safety course. Anyone who goes on a site that has hazardous materials has to have that. And then the RR&P, that's the renovation, repair, and painting certification, which anyone who deals with lead paint in 1978 or pre-housing, in 78 and before, they used lead paint in housing and to protect the workers when they're either deconstructing or repairing or putting new windows in or painting, there's a very specific plan for certifying the safety of the people on the job. Those two, they want everyone to have. And then there's about eight other certifications that you might give to people. There's things like if you're doing a construction curriculum, there's a 10-hour general construction. You might have something in mold or radon, depending on the specific courses. There's a whole list of OSHA courses. I'll put in, and I think I put it in last session notes, there's an excellent, if you want an excellent resource, it's actually the Rocky Mountain Education Center, and I'll put their website in. They have been doing OSHA, EPA, and NIHS, National Institute of Environmental Health Science, training and certifying for probably the last 20 years, and they have about this catalog is about 80 pages, and it talks about just about every health and safety, EPA, OSHA certification that exists. And I'll put the web address in the notes, so you'll have that. Morgan, do we have your email?
I don't think you do. It's mahorton at hacc.edu.
That's mah. Could you repeat that?
Orton.
C-O-M?
At HACC.edu.
Okay. Okay. I'll send you, we'll send post-session notes that'll have that material, and you can see exactly all of those certifications. I just want to make sure I have that. M-A-H-O-R-C-O. Is
it's
that
P as in Tom. P-O-M.
C.
Like Horton Hears a Who.
Oh, okay. P-O-M. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. At HACC.edu. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Hopefully we'll get that to you. And if for some reason you don't get those session notes in the next 2 days, my email is msenew@aol.com.
Okay.
Great. Well, we'll see y'all in a couple of weeks, and we can go into this very issue of certifications in more detail then. Okay? Y'all have a good week.
All right. Thanks again.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.